The Conversation Hour with Richard Feidler.
Good morning to you. I'm Richard Feidler. Lovely to have your company this morning. My guest today for you is an adventurer, a millionaire, a philanthropist, a former Australian of the Year, and a former Boy Scout as well. He's incredibly rich and started his own company with a princely sum of $610. He's never afraid to speak his mind, and he does so regularly. And his views have won him a few friends in high places. He founded the Australian Geographic magazine, and his face is on biscuit packets and shop windows all around the country. Dick Smith, welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Hi, Richard. Great to be here.
Dick, you've started your first company with $610, and that shows a lot of nous for someone who was pretty hopeless at school. Now, you are, by your own admission, hopeless at school.
I was, yeah. My parents used to say to each other, thank heavens they didn't tell me, they used to say, whatever will happen to Dick. My older sister was quite good at school and she went and became a pharmacist. And I was just hopeless. I remember in intermediate certificate I got 7% in French. And I've never been able to, in fact, I suppose someone would say today I was slightly dyslexic. I also had a problem, I had a sort of a speech defect, and until the age of about 10, I couldn't say the letter S. And so the teacher would say, what's your name? And I'd say Dick Fish or Dick Miff. And I remember all the class would scream with laughter, and it just made me feel worse. Once I got sent to the headmistress, as they called it in those days, and she eventually rang my mother, and my mother said, well, he can't say S. And so that really gave me a terrible problem at school. I hated school.
Does that make you strong?
No, it didn't. It gave me a terrible inferiority complex. And when I left school, all my friends, I'd been sort of a radio boffin and I used to build crystal sets and things like that. But being no good academically, it meant I couldn't go to university. So all my friends went off to do radio engineering and I ended up working in a factory. And until I was about 25, 26, I'd say I had a terrible inferiority complex.
So what broke you out of it? How did you change? It
was amazing. I started this Dick Smith Electronics with $610 and I started servicing the Manly cab radios and installing car radios, and I suddenly found I was good at something. And the first year of my business, back in 1968, I'd started at the Big Bear supermarket, which is just on the northern suburbs of Sydney at Neutral Bay, and I remember I paid $15 a week rent. I paid myself $40 and I had one person working for me who got $65. And at the end of the first year, my accountant said, look, you've done really well. You've made more money than the Prime Minister of Australia. Now, in those days, the Prime Minister got about 30 grand a year. But I said, well, hold on, I don't have any money. And he said, well, look, it's all gone back into stock and you've paid tax. And I'm really not a great person at understanding business balance sheets and things like that. But I knew that if you just work damn hard and you put all the money back into the business, you'd have to do good in the end.
I'm in conversation this morning with Dick Smith. I hardly need to explain who Dick is because we all know his face so well to us. And that's part of it as well. You've always been an exceptionally good marketer. You've marketed yourself very well. I remember like signs for your business where you started up going around the place. Where the electronic Dick was a big one.
Absolutely. But that, it was interesting. I've always been a great asker of advice. People ask me about success forces and I say, look, ask advice and surround yourself with capable people. And I think maybe because I'm not academically qualified, that a lot of people who get academically qualified think they're supposed to know things, so they probably don't want to ask. I don't think I'm supposed to know anything, so I've never had any problems in just asking people for advice. And that original, the dickhead you now see on Dick Smith Electronics, that little face, I remember back in about 1969, I was lying under the dashboard of a car, and this, I said to the man, oh, what do you do? And he said, I'm an advertising agent. And I said, what's that? I didn't even know what one was. And he said, oh, we advertise people's products. And I said, look, I've got my little car radio business. I want to be famous all around Sydney. And so he came up with the idea of that dickhead photograph and reversed it. And he did this ad where he called me a car radio nut. And I thought that was fantastic. And so we ran these little ads and I became known all across Sydney, and people would drive from Liverpool past far better car radio places. So the marketing came just from experience. I also didn't have any money, and that's a great advantage when you have no money. And my first free publicity came when I was I was sitting in a dentist's waiting room and I saw in Pix People magazine a petrol-powered pogo stick in America. And this thing was, I ended up buying one for $120. I imported it. And I rang up a chap at the Sun Herald. And I said, look, I'm going to bring 20,000 of these pogo sticks in and sell them to housewives to go to the supermarket. Now, it was just a tall story. And he believed it and he wrote an article on it. And then the Chris Kirby Late Show rang me up and I went in and jumped around on my pogo stick. This is on Channel 9. And in the end, I became a regular on the Don Lane Show. They used to fly me to Melbourne and pay me to go and give me publicity. I mean, it was amazing.
You know, Kerry Packer was dyslexic, famously dyslexic as well. And so consequently, I was told that when he wanted to find out things, he wouldn't get it from a book. He'd bring in an expert and ask them questions, and they'd speak to him. And the advantage for that, of course, is that you don't have to accept something off the printed page. You actually interrogate the person who's talking to you. Is that what you do as well?
I think so. It must be. Look, it must have just come naturally. And I love reading books, but I've learnt my business success from making every mistake and asking lots of advice. And I think I've got common sense, and that's all you need, common sense, because if you ask lots of advice, you'll actually get lots of wrong advice, but you get enough good advice. And I just use common sense to decide which is most likely to be the correct advice. Let's do that.
Has business always been fun for you?
Oh, yes. Look, my greatest adventure, people think it's flying around the world or ballooning across Australia. No, it was starting Dick Smith Electronics, knowing nothing. And see, when I started the business, I had $600. My wife now, she was my fiancée, she was only 18, she put in $10. I always mention that, by the way, because if ever we get divorced, that's how it's divided up, isn't it? Anyway,
I don't think so, dear.
Oh, isn't it? Oh, fair enough. Well, she put in $10, I put in $600, and it was really interesting because we thought a successful business. We saw a company called Howard Car Radio at Chatswood who had three people working for him. And that was just the ultimate success. And I never envisaged I'd ever become sort of a dirty capitalist and with a big business with 500 people working for me. I was more surprised than anyone. And when I was about 38 years of age and Woolworths said they'll buy my business for $25 million, all my advisors said, oh, you can't do that, Dick. You know, it's got great potential. You could become a Kerry Packer and a Rupert Murdoch. And I looked at them and I said, no, look, I imagine getting $25 million. I mean, I'm 38. I'll go adventuring around the world and I can do good things for people and all of those things. And they thought I was eccentric to sell out, whereas I thought I was quite normal.
But you said the big adventure for you was the business. So why did you then sell it? Why didn't you want to continue that adventure?
Oh, because, creating the business was the adventure. Running it is boring. So every business I've ever created, there's no way I want to run it. And so only when it's growing, and I don't want to grow things too big. I don't like big business. And when I didn't know all the staff, and when I couldn't fit the figures, we ended up with 50 stores. And on a double page of an exercise book, you can put 25 lines of shops, how much the turnover was and what their salaries were for the week. And that was the way I ran the business. I knew whether I was making money or not. Well, when it got to 50 shops and it wouldn't fit on the double page of the exercise book, I said, sell, I don't want it anymore, it's too big.
So when you sold it, it put you in the company of some of the richest people in Australia, one of the BRW 100 richest list, I suppose. Do you get to mix in that company, or are the other people on that list like you?
I don't. I don't really mix with those people. The only people I know who are wealthy, and they're really a lot wealthier than me, is John Singleton and Jerry Harvey. But I don't really. I'm very much a loner, and so and I quite pride myself. I have two friends. One is Bob Brown, who is he's certainly not a millionaire. He's not a capitalist, and the other one is Keith Williams, who owned. The Hamilton Island, and he's the complete opposite to Bob Brown. And I like both of them. And one day I'm going to try and organise a lunch with Bob Brown and Keith Williams, my two friends.
Oh, can I come along and put a microphone in the middle of the table?
It would be incredible because they're so opposite in their views, but they're really fundamentally both incredibly decent Australians. And isn't it wonderful how we can have such a range of people in this country?
I'm just wondering, though, that in terms of personality types, do you think most people who become as wealthy as you are like you? They have that kind of mind that always asks why in a almost childlike fashion in the way you do.
Well, yeah, maybe I've never grown up. Look, I haven't got a clue. I think I'm disappointed that so many wealthy people tend to be selfish. I mean, I was very proud when you mentioned the word philanthropist. I can't even say it correctly. And as a kid, My parents always, they never had any money, but they were in the Progress Association, the Boy Scouts Auxiliary and everything, and they just set by an example. And I remember at the time there was Sir McPherson McRobertson and Sir Edward Holstrom of the Zoo, and I said, what are these people? What is a philanthropist? And my mum said, oh, it's someone who's done really well, who puts something back into society. And I remember thinking then, I never envisaged I could be one, but wouldn't that be great? And I donate money to things for selfish reasons. It makes me feel good. And I'm surprised when you say here about Kerry Packer, who did most of his donations secretly. Now, I think that's really sad. I don't want my name on a donation, but I don't want around making it secret, because what's wrong with a businessman who's done well setting an example that says, hey, we should pay our taxes because we've only done well out of this country because it's such a fantastic country, and we should have the American ethos of also being obligated to put something back into society as well.
I'm in conversation this morning with Dick Smith. Dick, where did your passion for flying come from? It's something that's been...